when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to the QuickBook Reviews podcast. Brighten your day with a book.
Hello, my fellow bookworms. This is Philippa from QuickBook Reviews, author interviews and book reviews. Well, coming up today, I am so pleased to be able to tell you that we've got CJ Scoose on, who's author of the Sweet Pea series. Latest book is Thorn in My Side. I have loved those books and I'm very excited to be able to talk to her. Also, other books, no Women's Prize fiction books this week. We have got a selection. We've got A Sign of Her Own by Sarah Marsh, Five Minds by Guy Maupas, and the play, get me, An Inspector Calls by J.B. Priestley. Now, before we get started, I just need to make a declaration. I need to come clean with you. I know I said that this was the year where I was not going to buy any more printed books. Yes, I'd get the audiobooks and I'd get the Kindle books. I'd also use the library more. But my house is about to collapse from the weight of books I have here. So my goal was I wasn't going to buy any printed books. And oh, I've been doing so well. And then I was in a well-known bookshop with my daughter and we were looking at card games to take on holiday for when we go later this year. And there were a few who were like, oh, let's get this one, let's get that one. And then I was just looking at one of the book tables. I said, oh, that's the book we're doing at book club next month. I better get it. And then I said, oh, if you buy one, you get another one half price. So I better get this one. I promise you, in my head, I wasn't thinking about, I don't know if they sort of put in some hormones in that shop that make you not able to think rationally. But I didn't think about my book buying ban at that point. And I went and I bought them. And they said, oh, you've got even more points on your card. So now I need to go back and spend those points. I am sorry. I have failed you. I have failed myself. I just can't stop it. I think I'm going to have to renounce. I am going to try and be careful about the amount of books that I buy. But I did really well for three and a bit months. And then I failed you. And it was only, I didn't even think about it when I got home. It was only a few days afterwards, I thought, oh no, I have failed. I've failed myself. I've failed you. So there, apologies. Anyway, let's get stuck in straight away to Thorn in My Side. Let me tell you a little bit about this book. Rhiannon Lewis thought she finally had it all. Thanks to the pandemic, she's had to keep a much lower profile, but has found happiness with her fiancé, Raphael, and his family. For once, she's surrounded by people who love her for who she is, or who they think she is. After over 800 days without murdering anyone, the woman, formerly known as the Sweet Pea Killer, thinks she might have finally turned over a new leaf. That is, until her soon-to-be sister-in-law has a run-in with her abusive ex, and Rhiannon rediscovers her taste for revenge. This time, with a loving family in tow, the stakes are much higher. Wedded bliss and life as a normal person are finally within Rhiannon's reach. But can you never keep a good serial killer down? Now, the biggest issue I have with these books is trying to pronounce the author's surname, which is shocking, really. CJ Scoose is how I'm going to try it. I apologise. I'm always getting it wrong. But these books are brilliant. The audiobooks, the printed books, they are so sharp and engaging and different and funny and, yeah, about a serial killer. But anyway, enough of me. Let's go and talk to the author straight away. It is my huge pleasure to welcome to the podcast today CJ Skuus, whose latest book is Thorn in My Side. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, the amount of times I've tried to pronounce your surname, Claire, and I'm still getting it wrong, and I was just laughing as I was trying to say that. Go on, you tell us your surname and have it so it's pronounced properly at least once on this podcast.
Yeah, it's pronounced Skuus, but don't beat yourself up because nobody pronounces it right.
Dear, oh dear. Well, enough about my awful pronunciation. I am thrilled to have you on. You've come on a bit at the last minute. I had to change things round, but I was so glad that you agreed when I reached out to you because I love your books. Now, I'll be honest, I'm two books in, and the latest book you've written is Thorn in My Side, which is the fourth book. So I think we're going to talk about that one in particular, but also the whole range of books because they are extraordinary and I'm very excited to talk to you. So let's get started. First of all, can you give us a bit of a summary of Thorn in My Side, but also of the series as a whole?
Right. So the series as a whole, if people are completely new to it, it's about a 27-year-old serial killer called Rhiannon Lewis, who is British. She, when the book starts, she lives in the UK. She has a boyfriend. She has a little dog called Tink. She has a very dull office job where she's an editorial assistant at a local newspaper. And she's very overlooked and undermined in her own life. And as the books proceed, things change. So in each book, she is in a different place. She's moved on. She's in a different part of her life, if you like. So I'll try not to spoil her too much, but in the second book, she's living with her ex-boyfriend's parents who are looking after her, and they're on the southwest coast in England. And in the third book, she's had to leave the country for obvious reasons. And this fourth book sees her settled. So it's post-pandemic. I sort of hop over the pandemic and it's post-pandemic and she's living with a family. And for a very long time, she hasn't killed anyone. So we join her right at the start of her beginning to break down again and wanting to kill.
Fantastic. I mean, as I say, I'm just about to start book three and I love it. Everybody seems to love these books. And wherever I look, there are positive reviews and pictures. Are you getting that sort of feedback as well?
Yeah, big time, big time. And I honestly, it's going to sound like fake sincerity, but I am so grateful for every single review that they get. Every time somebody goes into a library or a bookshop and picks these books up, even if they don't like them, even if, you know, it makes them feel not as great as another book, at least they've had a go, at least they've tried it. And I get it. It's a very Marmite series. I think if you're put off by the voice or the language, because there's a fair bit of swearing in there, there's a fair bit of gore, particularly in the first couple of books. I get it if people don't like it, but I am genuinely thrilled whenever anybody bothers to pick it up, first of all, and then even more so bothers to review it. Because as I was just saying before we came on air, there are so many books. There's such a fight for shelf space in bookshops. So, you know, I'm in awe of people who just take the time to read them. And hopefully I can deliver with each book because it's almost coming to an end of the series now. So I want to go out with a little bit of a bang.
Oh, so is it, have you got a set number of books in mind then as to the longevity of
it? The fifth book. The fifth book is out in October this year and that's the end. That is the end.
Oh, oh my goodness, yeah. I'm not ready for that.
I can't string this out any longer.
I mean, how did you get the idea for Rhiannon? I love this. Even though, yeah, she's a serial killer, but you know, I could be her defense lawyer. I could argue for her. How did she come to you? Because she is amazing.
She came to me from a variety of places. I've wanted to write about a serial killer for a really long time. And anyone who's read my young adult novels will see flashes of her humour and just the sheer kind of sarcasm that she brings to every situation. That is my sense of humour. When I'm not being professional and I'm not at work, that is what I like. But also it was the resentment I felt from constantly being afraid as a woman. constantly being put down in various work situations, constantly being left out of things. As I think a lot of people feel, you know, in certain situations, particularly now, I've never known people so angry as they are now in general. But when I was just beginning to write Sweet Pea, I'd been through a couple of bereavements and I was a volcano ready to explode. I just had so much venom and so much resentment, and it had to come out, and it was either write a serial killer or become one, I think. So it was safe just to find Rhiannon and let her vent for me.
But I was very interested to meet the author of Rhiannon, because she's full on, and she doesn't mess around. So I didn't know if you, what sort of person you're very different to Rhiannon in talking to you.
I am. I'm the exact opposite in many ways, because, as I said, you know, when I started writing the books, I was so afraid of walking out at night. You know, typically as a woman, you're told to carry your keys in your hand. You're told to walk down the centre of the road, not stay out too late, blah, 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 not wear a ponytail. And I'm sick of feeling like that. And I wanted to write a character who wasn't afraid, a woman who would go out at night and actively look for men to take down, predatory men. You know, this isn't a polemic on how much I hate men. It's not. It's a polemic on how much I hate being afraid of being a woman, and how much I hate people who are predatory towards women and towards children and animals. And, you know, I would not let Rhiannon hurt a child or an animal, because I can't do that. And I can't read about it. I can't read news stories about it. So that was my line that she didn't cross. But yeah, it just came from this kind of feeling of injustice within me, really. And around the time, there was a TV series on called The Fall, if you remember, with Gillian Anderson and Jamie Dornan.
Yeah.
Where he plays a serial killer and she's the detective pursuing him. And the trailer that came on BBC Two, I think, was her hunting him. She was stalking him. And I thought, oh, a woman stalking a man. I like that. I haven't seen that before. I'm sure it has been done before, but I haven't seen it. And I'd not long since watched Dexter, and I liked Dexter. I liked how he was a weirdly good guy, but in a really bad way. And I just thought, I want to see a female Dexter, but I want her to be very relatable. And the most relatable female in fiction I could think of was Bridget Jones. So that's how I pitched it to my agent. I said, well, it's Bridget Jones meets Dexter. And they were like, oh my God, write it. Yes, we love it.
Yeah. And so that takes us on to one of my favourite bits of the books, which is the kill list. Every chapter, Rhiannon lists things that have wound her up, a lot of which, not all of them, but a lot of which I share, like people at the checkout that squeeze your bread. I just can't be doing with that. I'm sorry. If my bread is not in shape, I'm not happy. So, yeah, I absolutely love that. And it ties in. I wonder if you could perhaps read us a bit from Thorn in My Side, and hopefully it includes a bit of a kill list.
It does, yes. So this is the first two pages from Thorn in My Side, the fourth Sweet Pea book. So I'm trying not to spoiler, but at the very start of this book, and at the very end of the previous book, she's at an airport. She's at John F. Kennedy International Airport. It's the 24th of January, 2020. And she's got to make a decision, basically. Does she go back to London? Does she fly back to London? Go and find her child, who she's had adopted out. That's a big spoiler, but it's there. Because she knows she's in danger. She's living with the woman who she left her with, Claudia, and her new husband, but she's found out the husband has a sexual offence on his record. So she's thinking, do I go back and save Ivy, or do I go to San Diego as intended and be with the family I have now and, you know, trust that Claudia is going to look after her baby? So she's in a bit of a tumult. She doesn't know what to do. So here's the kill list. 1, people who hog airport seats for hours. And when they finally vacate, you have to sit in the ghost of their arse warmth. 2, people who crowd the baggage carousel. 3, people who aren't ready when they're next in the security line. Get your effing sketches off, Karen. 4, everyone involved with the movie version of Cats. Also, Idris Elba as McCavity is off the charts hot in this, but he's a cat. How am I meant to feel? Like I want to F a cat. I don't get it. Hi, Mitch Silverton, the convicted paedophile currently living under the same roof as my daughter. Don't look. Just don't look. I march down endless walkways, thronging with families, studying leaflets for the Statue of Liberty and Empire State. I'm not looking at them. I'm not looking at their kids. I'm not looking at the other departure boards either, because I am not going to London. I am going to gate C61 to get my connecting flight, Delta 762, to San Diego. But there are so many children about. So many tiny reminders. Small, wriggling guilt trips everywhere I look. My throat constricts with every laugh. My stomach churns with every shriek or scream. Every single one of them sends my thoughts straight back to Ivy in my mind, straight back to England, where I should be headed now. I should go to her. She needs me. A ginger kid dances across my path, toy monkey wrapped around her waist. A small boy kicks his legs in his pushchair. He wants his cake now. A girl rides a blue trunkie. Another sits on a luggage cart pretending she's on a gondola. One noms on a colossal breast. In slings, on shoulders, running in shops, along travelators, walking a toy bunny along the back of her dad's seat. Oh, get out of my way, get away from me. I pass gate after gate, seeing London boarding soon on the screen. London now boarding. London, London, London. The place where Ivy is, my baby who needs me. My baby who is in danger. I don't stop for the sandwich I've promised my rumbling stomach since Seren's house. Instead, I keep walking. Only 6 more hours and I'll be home, in my fiancé's arms. Raph will talk me back to sense. I just have to turn off my brain until I get to him. I doom scroll the latest apocalypse trend, see what flag Twitter's losing its mind about today. Someone's chopping coleslaw, someone else is cancelling some singer for a tweet they sent 11 years ago. Someone's collapsed in the street in China and there's a video of it doing the rounds. Ivy needs you. Your baby needs you.
Oh, well, once I finish doing this interview, I'm going to just go and read book 3 immediately and then read book 4. I should say the first book I listened to as an audiobook as well. And I love that. The narration of it just, I felt was right on the money. Were you comfortable with it?
Absolutely, yeah. Georgia McGuire is the narrator of all the books, and I really lucked out with her. She's lots of people have said to me, that is Rhiannon. That's the Rhiannon I've got in my head. She does it perfectly. So yeah, hopefully she'll be on board to do Bad Seeds as well, book 5.
Ah, so that's the name of book 5, Bad Seeds.
Bad Seeds. I'm hoping I can share a cover sometime soon. But yeah, it's coming out October.
Very, very good. And can we just talk about Sylvanian families? Because I have a thing about Sylvanian families. I love them. And when my kids were young, I would try, oh, should we put some Sylvanian families on the Christmas list? No, no, no. And they just refused to want them. And it's got to the point now where they're too old. And I'm thinking, well, am I going to have to buy them for myself? And then I came across Rhiannon's love of Sylvanian families. And I thought, oh, I would hasten to say I'm not a serial killer, but there's increasingly more of Rhiannon that seems to reflect me, especially a menopausal woman.
It's not the first time I've heard that. There's so many people who've messaged me saying, is it wrong that I want to be Rhiannon's friend? I'm like, I don't think she'll want to be your friend, but she doesn't do very well with friends. But yeah, the Sylvanian thing, I can't remember where that came from. I just really like Sylvanian families, and I unabashedly love miniature things. I love dolls' houses. I go a little bit ballistic when I see little tiny doll's house. I just want to spend hours with it. Not playing, just sort of moving stuff around. But yeah, kids who don't like Sylvanians, that's a new one. I've always loved them. And I've loved them really because I don't think there are any sets of miniature toys that are as well made as Sylvanians. They're really robust and it's just really good quality. And I could wax lyrical about Sylvanians all day. I really could.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, my kids are now anti-books as well, so I may have to just remove them from my family. You know, that's...
You have failed them.
Yeah, right. I have. They say it's because I'm too into books that I've pushed them away from books, but I just think that's
Yeah.
It's an excuse, but never mind. I just wonder, is there a line that you don't cross? You mentioned about how you wouldn't want Rhiannon to kill a child or a dog, but are you always running checking levels as you're writing to make sure she's all that she should be, but no more than that?
Yeah, and really, she's kind of got my moral compass because I know where I am and I think I'm a fairly decent person and I'm learning all the time as well. And I think Rhiannon's learning. There's something that happens in Thorn, quite a world-breaking thing for Rhiannon. And because of that, she learns not to do it again in book five. So I feel like even with something as big as killing somebody, by book five, I want Rhiannon to have learnt that it's not always the answer to kill someone or to try and solve a situation with violence. And I've learned this as well. I've learned, because I'm a bit of a Karen on the sly. I kind of, whenever I see an injustice, I just want to, you know, you shouldn't be parking there, or why are you talking to your child like that? I'm getting to that age where I, you know, you get old person's rights, don't you? Where you just start saying exactly what's on your mind. But I can't stand injustices, especially when it's to people who can't speak for themselves or think for themselves. So her moral compass is kind of mine. So the line is, if something feels wrong, I just don't write it. If she was to say something racist or homophobic, I would feel like, oh no. And I just feel it's just this natural feeling of, no, I don't like you anymore if you're saying that. And I've tried to do it in the first book where there's a couple of moments where she kills people and I knew how the reader was going to react. So there's a person who, well, there's a couple of people, I think, in book one who just don't, quote unquote, deserve it. And it comes out of the blue. And even Rhiannon doesn't feel right afterwards. It's just like, ugh, that was, I did it because I wanted to do it at the time, but that's icky. So hopefully by book five, the reader will see that she's learned her lesson from what she's done. And she's learned that there are consequences to some of these people that she's killed. Yeah, I think that's it, really.
It's just so interesting. And I can't wait to read on and be ready to read book five as soon as it comes out. Have you got plans for other types of books? You mentioned about the YA that you've written as well. Where do you see yourself next? Will Rhiannon be able to let go of you?
She has to let go of me in book five, but I would love to write Ivy's story. That's sort of on the back burner right now. So Ivy is the baby who is born in book two. And I have plotted out a whole Ivy book that would take place about 12 years from the end of Bad Seeds. So that is what I would love to write, but it depends. It depends how the TV series does. It depends if I'm allowed to write that, because I can't just write it and, you know, hope for the best. But just more standalone crime thrillers with first-person protagonists who are kind of unhinged. That's where I see my future, really. Can't get out of it at the moment.
Writing these characters make you more saintly in real life? Do you sort of get out your, not your venom, but your fury as you write and you emerge, you know, super saintly?
There's not enough books in the world to get out my rage, to be honest, because as you just said about menopause, I am bordering on perimenopausal now and I'm finding a whole new well of rage to tap. So no, I wish I could get it all out on the page, but no, fundamentally, I am a decent person. And I know you shouldn't really trust anyone who says that, but I couldn't hurt a fly. I could hurt a fly, but not a bee. You know, flies fine, bees no. Anything bigger than a bee.
I love that. There's a line between flies and bees, and you've just drawn that. So yeah.
Flies bad, bees good.
Now, you mentioned the phrase TV series, which is very, very exciting. What can you tell us?
Oh, gosh, it's so exciting. I have to keep sort of pouring cold water on my excitement because this has taken so long to come about, as these things do. But it's coming out later this year. I don't know exactly when, but it's made, it's edited as far as I know. I've seen a trailer, which is just all kinds of exciting. And it looks so good. It's like I've had nothing to do with it. Because, you know, I know that sounds really weird, but It looks so professional, and I don't consider myself very professional, but it's so clean. It's so well acted, directed. It's, oh my goodness, I can't wait for people to see it. It looks great.
Did you write the script for it?
No, I didn't. Okay. They said, they offered very, very early on, they said, would you like to write a script for it? And I said, no, kind of immediately, no. I'm not a script writer. I'm a novelist on a good day. So I would have to learn how to write a script. I would have to pick up that skill. And I didn't want to hold this up. I knew it was going to take a while for this to be produced and to get the money to fund it, to find a broadcaster. So I thought, why am I going to be the cog that gets in the way and holds things up? Let the people who know what they're doing do it. So they've got some, I think they've had different script writers. Kirsty Swain was the lead script writer. And then they had some other script writers come in whose names have just fallen out of my head at the moment, I'm afraid. But so they've had a couple of script writers doing it. And I've just stepped back and let them take it and run with it. Because it's difficult when you've written a book, I'd have to revisit it and then take so much out of it. And ultimately, I really want people to like it as well. And I think if you take it directly from page to screen, it would be quite easy to make her unlikable because she does do quite a lot of unlikable things in that first book. So I just figured, let the professionals do what they do best.
Are you able to talk about the cast, or is that something that's...
Yeah, it's out. It's all out in the open. So Ella Purnell plays Rhiannon, and she's also executive producer on the project. Mm-hmm. I've just been watching her this weekend in Fallout on Prime. Oh gosh, she's just magnificent. She really is. I initially thought she was American when they announced the cast. I was like, oh, this is a really British character, and you've got an American to play her. And then I googled her, and I thought, she's British. She just does a really good American accent. And she's just incredible. From what I've seen, she just nails it, absolutely nails the character. Who else have we got? We've got, I was very excited about this. Her boss is played by Jeremy Swift, who is basically Higgins in Ted Lasso, if you've ever watched that.
Yeah.
I just jumped for joy when I heard that because I love Ted Lasso. John Poynting plays Craig, who is, it's like someone scooped inside my brain and pulled out Craig and put him in human form. That sounds really bad on John, but I just mean looks wise. Personality completely different, but looks wise, that's exactly how I imagine Craig. AJ is played by Callum Lynch, who was, I think he was last seen in Archie. If you haven't seen that, it's a biopic of Cary Grant on ITVX. And he's just fantastic. He is the embodiment of AJ. He actually brings a more of an intelligence to the character than I have written him in the books. Because in the books, he's a bit of a puffball. He's like 19 and very naive. And in the TV series, he's a lot more intelligent and he's got a lot more going for him. So yeah, he's incredible. And he was also in Bridgerton series 2 as well. I have to mention that. Or I get messages on Twitter if I don't. I don't mention Bridgerton. Who else have we got? Nicole Leckie plays Julia, and they've done something slightly different with that storyline, which is really interesting. So there's a few changes from the books. That's about as much as I can say, really, but it's going to be fantastic. It really is. Can't wait for people to see it.
Oh, wonderful. And can you just remind us, so the latest book out at the moment is Thorn in My Side. But if people haven't read any of them, what's the first book that they should start with?
They should start with Sweet Pea. That's the big pink book, pink and yellow. And if you read chapter one and you don't like it, don't read on because it doesn't get any cleaner. And I always say, just try chapter one. That's what you're in for. And if you don't like chapter one, put it down. That's fine. But the other thing I want people to take away with them is the fact that this is a character who grows. She does change. She does sort of learn some lessons along the way. So don't think every book is going to be like book one. She's very angry in book one. She's very confused. But as the series goes on, she does find a reason to be better.
And as you said, Rhiannon is a reflection on the times we live in and the dangers and issues that people face. So it's not necessarily Rhiannon's fault. It's the world where I am defending Rhiannon. I'm going to defend her to the hilt here. It's quite worrying.
I mean, in the books, she underwent an attack that happened when she was six. A man stormed her creche and killed all the children and injured Rhiannon. So for me, that lets her off the hook of almost everything because she can't really control her actions and reactions when she's an adult. And also the way that she was dealt with as a child, you know, her dad encouraged her violent tendencies and her mum all but ignored her because she didn't understand what her daughter was after coming out of hospital. She was like, I don't get this kid anymore. I don't want to hug her. I don't want her anywhere near me. So she was really badly dealt with by society in general. So I get her completely. I love her to pieces.
Oh, wonderful. Well, we come to the section where I'm going to ask you for some book recommendations. And I am very intrigued to hear what three books that you would recommend to us.
Well, two of them, I'm doing a PhD by publication at the moment. So they're all a bit feminist and nonfiction. But I've tried to pick one fiction one that I've been sent recently. So the first book I've picked is Laura Bates's Fix the System, Not the Women. And it's basically just opened my eyes to how gendered I am and how everything I've learned in my life is kind of wrong, you know? And it comes down to things that we're taught as little girls, the things that are on our T-shirts, the slogans that are on our T-shirts, you know, the things we're taught and that are different from how boys are taught. And it's just really opening my eyes about how we are treated in society and you know, everyday sexism. The hashtag that she started. It's very, very good read. It's a very sobering read as well. Mm-hmm. And along those lines, another book is The Seven Necessary Sins for Women and Girls by Mona El-Tahawi. This is another book, another nonfiction cry into the void about basically how women shouldn't be angry. They shouldn't be lustful. They shouldn't be violent. They should, you know, it's sort of an absolute, I don't know how to say it. It's just railing against all the things that women, again, are taught or taught not to be in society. And she just wants all-out destruction of the patriarchy. It's really powerful. Third book is a YA novel. This is a proof copy that I've got at the moment, but I want to just signpost it because it's coming out in June with Bloomsbury. It's called The Love Interest, and it's by a new author, debut author called Helen Comerford. And it's basically Lois Lane's story. It's not Lois Lane in the book, but it's the story of the girlfriend of the superhero. And, you know, it's just so good. It's such a good concept for a book. It's funny. It's romantic. It's sweet. It's effortlessly readable. And Helen was one of my tutees. I teach creative writing, and she was one of my manuscript tutees a couple of years ago. But she's one of those infuriating students who you just can't teach her anything because she already is fantastic. So, you know, I just can't wait to see how her career unfolds because she's just got a really bright future ahead of her. And I just wanted to big up that book, The Love Interest by Helen Ford.
Well, I think all three of those books sound brilliant. Two really good nonfiction. And as you say, this book coming out in June that we all need to get hold of. I'll be sending a little email to Bloomsbury after this. After this chat, it sounds great. We come to the final question, which is the most crucial one, and it is about biscuits. What is your biscuit of choice? What biscuit powered the writing of Thorn in My Side?
I tend not to buy biscuits. That's the first thing I say, because I have a problem with sweet things in that if they're in the house, I will eat them. It doesn't matter if it's a double sleeve of Jaffa cakes. If they're in the house, they will be gone. So I tend not to buy them for myself. I will go to other people's houses and steal theirs. But my personal biscuit of choice, I think, might be a Bourbon biscuit, which is really dull and is essentially a naked penguin. But I really like Bourbons.
I never thought of it like that.
You look at a penguin and you tell me I'm wrong.
Well, I'm not going to be able to look at a penguin now because all I'm going to see is a Bourbon and think that, yes, that's just thrown me completely. But a brilliant answer for a brilliant series of books. Claire, it's just been wonderful to talk to you and hear more about the whole series and particularly Thorn in My Side. CJ Scoose, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Coming up, 3 book reviews.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Now, before we go on, I should just mention that the 3 very interesting books that CJ Skews mentioned in the interview as her recommendations, they are listed in your show notes. So if you click on the information under this podcast, there's some writing and you will find those show notes there. Let's get stuck into the book, the next book to tell you about, A Sign of Her Own by Sarah Marsh. And this is quite a book. Let me tell you about it. Ellen Lark is on the verge of marriage when she and her fiancé receive an unexpected visit from Alexander Graham Bell. While her fiancé is eager to make a potentially lucrative acquaintance, Ellen knows what Bell really wants from her. Ellen is deaf, and for a time was Bell's student in a technique called visible speech. As he instructed her in speaking, Bell also confided in her about his dream of producing a device which would transmit the human voice along a wire. The telephone. Now on the cusp of wealth and renown, Bell wants Ellen to speak up in support of his claim to the patent to the telephone, which is being challenged by rivals. But Ellen has a different story to tell, that of how Bell betrayed her and other deaf pupils in pursuit of ambition and personal gain, and cut Ellen off from a community in which she'd come to feel truly at home. It is a story no one around Ellen seems to want to hear. But there may never be a more important time for her to tell it. So yeah, this book is quite something. It's extraordinary. And it's got, on the inside of the book, there's the different sign language as well, which is wonderful. Let me read you a little bit from the book. London. Today's mistake is a jar of peaches. It sits on the parlour table, the halves inside plump with sunshine. Mr. Bell, who has unexpectedly come to visit, doesn't seem to notice the jar at first. He stands by the hearth, too agitated by his enthusiasm to be seated. My fiancé, Harmon Bardsley, stands only to match him, but can't keep his words apace. I leave my careful watch of their lips and look at the jar because of the words I've seen. Surely I'm mistaken. The men aren't even looking at the jar. So why would they be discussing the peaches? I'm ashamed to say I learnt so much about sign language and, you know, being deaf and how that impacts on you, that I'm just ashamed that I didn't know more already. You think you know things, but you just don't. And the book commands you to read on and to discover more about it. So it's a very interesting story. Crikey, Sarah can certainly write a book, but it makes you realise what... No, it doesn't make you realise what it's like to be part of the deaf community. It shines more of a light on that. But unless you're deaf yourself, I don't think you can know. But it drew me up and really made me think. And if that's not what a good book's supposed to be about, then I don't know what it is. So yeah, A Sign of Her Own by Sarah Marsh. Now let's get on to the book Five Minds by Guy Maupass. I like to listen to other book podcasts, would you believe? And one is Burt's Books. That's done by the team who run Burt's Bookshops. The interviewer was talking to somebody about books. I can't remember. It was a few weeks ago, maybe more. But the person he was talking to liked crime books. And so he said, "Have you read Five Minds?" She said, "No." And he said, "Well, I think you'd really like it." And that was enough for me. I thought, oh, that does sound interesting. I'm going to look that book up. And I got it from the library. Ladies and gentlemen, Philippa actually got a book from the library. I read it and I loved it. And so I want to tell you all about it. Let me explain a bit more. Alex, Kate, Mike, Sierra and Ben have spent 25 years trapped together. And there's no escape. They share one body, part of humanity's answer to its dangerously spiralling population. After more than two decades of bickering and petty vendettas, the one thing they can agree on is that they need a better host. And so they travel to a death park where they can win enough to get them the upgrades that will make the next 25 years bearable. But things go very wrong when Kate accepts a dangerous offer and one of them disappears. Someone is trying to kill off members of the commune, but why? Is one of them responsible? Or is an outsider playing a deadly game? It's hard enough to catch a murderer. It's almost impossible when you might be sharing a body with them. Let me read you a little bit from the beginning of this book. Alex, day one, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. What to call it? Waking, suiting up, slipping on the skin, uploading, downloading, body bounce, mind swap. Schizos are still searching for a word that make it feel better, more glamorous, normal even, but there isn't one. It doesn't matter what name you use, it still seems like someone's dragging your brain from the base of your spine to your skull and then kicking it. For good measure. I love this book. It starts off as a sort of dystopian, oh, this is what's happening. So you hear from all of the different characters in the book. And as I say, it starts off a bit of dystopian, which I'm completely here for. And then it becomes this sort of crime, what's going on, there's more to it, investigations are required, and it ends up quite complex, I found. So for me, sometimes a dystopian book ends up a bit namby-pamby, if you know what I mean. In it, I enjoy the beginning more than the end, whereas this just sort of ramped it up and ramped it up. Guy Maupass can write a book. I want to read his next one that's already out. So yeah, I would really recommend it. Really enjoyed it. Five Minds, Guy Maupass. Very good. And then finally is An Inspector Calls by J.B. Priestley. And I blame this entirely on the Facebook group for this podcast, the Quick Book Reviews Facebook group. You're very welcome to join us there. I normally give sneak peeks of the interviews coming up. And there's a bit of book chat, funnily enough, who knew? But lovely people on there. And there were a couple that said how they had read this book recently, this play recently, and enjoyed it. And I was in this place some time ago. How many years ago, Philippa, was it? I'm thinking about 35 years ago. Is that right? Am I that old? No, I'm not. How old am I? God, how old are you, Philippa? I think I was in this about 28 years ago. Yeah, not 35, Philippa. Come on, get a grip. And yes, I played the part of Sheila. And I could remember bits of it, but not lots of it. And if you are just sort of stuck and finding it hard to read a book, want something that's quite short but gripping, a play is absolutely the place to start. And An Inspector Calls, I thought, a bravo everyone in the Facebook group that mentioned it, because it's great. I loved going back and reading it again. There's so much I'd forgotten. In my copy, it's 72 pages long, so it's not going to take you weeks and weeks. And of course, it's just, there are some stage directions, but it's just the words really that the characters are speaking. So there's less waffle. That sounds a terrible thing to say when it's sort of beautifully written descriptions that people do, but you've just got the spoken words. And I thought it was great. It's an awful reflection on society. And so you've got this crime. I don't want to give too much away. You've got the inspector that comes, and it's just very close. It's the family and the inspector and the maid particularly are the main characters. I found it interesting having written the pantomime because it does include some directions like quietly, trying to be light and easy, excited. So there was more than I thought there would be with the play. So that's quite helpful in when I, with the pantomime, I've been given directions to know it's not just me. But I thoroughly enjoyed it and I would really recommend it. And I got this again from the library. I tried to get my son's copy because he's doing it for his GCSE. Quite worryingly, he doesn't know where his copy is. And his GCSEs start in a month. So that's great. That's all good. But anyway, really recommend Inspector Calls, J.B. Priestley. So there we go. Those are your books. We've had the wonderful C.J. Scuzon talking to us about the whole Sweet Pea series, but particularly the latest one, Thorn in My Side. And we've also had A Sign of Her Own by Sarah Marsh, Five Minds by Guy Maupas, and Inspector Calls by J.B. Priestley. Those are your books. I'm going on my way. Will I avoid buying any printed books over the next 7 days till I talk to you again? Who knows? It's not looking good, is it? Anyway, just look after yourselves and I'll talk to you very soon. Take care now. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the QuickBook Reviews podcast. That's enough books, said no one, ever. See you again soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.